is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. It's all good. Wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching, we are happy to have you.
Happy.
And I'm happy to have both of you here tonight.
Oh, geez.
Thanks for stopping by, Pete. Thanks for stopping by, Justin.
Stopping by? Are we just visiting for a little bit?
Yeah, just visiting.
Just a visit. That's what I consider our Tuesday night hangs is a little visit.
We come over to Alex's house to hang out a little
bit. I pay rent in this rectangle. This is my rectangle.
Whoa, how much does that cost in New York nowadays? $3,500, $4,000?
Very expensive, Alex.
Yeah. Too much,
very
man.
Expensive.
The rent is too damn high on these boxes.
Yeah.
Current election humor.
Pete's walls are closing in on him up there. Look at that thing.
Oh, my God. Pete. Now, he doesn't like it when I say things that we talked about right before the show. So I'm not going to say it.
Man, I want to get behind the curtain a little bit.
I'll tell you later. It's not that important. What is important, though, is that we have some great guests for you this evening. Why don't we bring in our first guest? Woo-hoo! He is one of the guys behind a lot of stuff at Archie Comics, as well as the man behind IDW Sonic the Hedgehog comics. But they've got a big multi-part story coming up from Archie very soon. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Flynn. Ian, welcome.
Hey,
hello.
Welcome.
Hey,
great day.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Very excited to have you here, Ian. Very excited to talk.
Oh, simmer down. We all have to.
No, we're too wound up. We're out of control right now.
So let's talk about what's going on with this Archie thing. Normally, you do a lot of different things at Archie, and you've written a lot of different titles. But the big thing that's coming up, which is very atypical for the classic Archie comics, is you're doing a multi-part story about Sabrina, introducing a new villain called Mother Striga. I mean, this is the broadest possible question, but why this? Why now? Like, why? How did they present this to you, or how did you present this to them?
I'm just kind of generally on tap for when they want somebody to write something. And editor, I believe he's editor in chief now. Who can keep track these days? Mike Pellerito reached out to me and said, hey, we had an idea for this project. It's a 3-part Sabrina story across 3 different specials. They're all standalone stories, but they're all also interconnected. Also, we're introducing a new major villain. Can you do it? It's like, yeah, sure. When do you need it by? And so we do. So it was a matter of, you know, making each one self-contained, make them fit the theme of the specials that they're going to be in, but also have a through line that goes between the three and opens it up for future adventures.
Nice. How does that feel? I feel like as a reader, Archie Comics is a little bit like, guess what we're doing? 3 one-shots that are interconnected. These 2 series touch each other at the end. Like everything is sort of going away and coming together. Does it feel chaotic on the inside? Because it simultaneously feels chaotic, but also feels like there's an overall plan.
There's a kind of general timelessness to Archie material stuff. It doesn't have the same kind of hard continuity that so many books suffer from these days. Mm-hmm. So once I embraced that, my blood pressure went down and it made things a lot more easier to tackle. So yes, these stories are interconnected. Hopefully they do build up on previous Sabrina stories, and hopefully they will be the foundation for future Sabrina stories. But if you miss out on one, you're not torpedoed. You'll be able to get into the next Sabrina story and go, oh, this is neat. And I have enough context to understand why this is fun. And you just roll with it.
Well, what about Mother Striga? Tell us about her. What makes her a good villain?
This was one of the points that Mike wanted, was that this is going to be the new big bad. Because Sabrina doesn't have a lot of big bads. Closest she's had recently is Amber Nightstone, who I believe was created by Dan Parent. Y'all have to cite me on that one, but and she's more of a rival when you get down to it, and kind of tragic in a way. The reason why she's angry at Sabrina all the time and what drives and motivates her, it's very personal, kind of street level. Mother Striga is the original Wicked Witch, the origin of dark magic, the reason why there are things that go bump in the night and make you scared. She is the apex predator when it comes to bad people with magic. And it's not a question of, you know, how will Sabrina win the day? It's a question of how Sabrina can survive this in any given encounter.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, I love the way you're describing it. This sounds very exciting. It's not the Archie horror line. It's the main Archie comic strips, which, at least from the outside, at least for my youth, and I think a lot of people think about it as more of gag strips. So how do you amp up that danger to that level you're talking about with a character like Mother Striga while still staying true to the format of classic Archie comics?
I liken it to the kind of heyday of animation back in like the 90s, the Disney Renaissance, the early Don Bluth stuff, where those are all family-friendly, child-accessible films, but they still had some teeth. And you go back and watch some of that stuff, and you're going, we were allowed to watch this when we were kids? And it's like, yes, because you need a little bit of trauma in your life to build from, you know? But it's candy-coated. So with stories like this, it's still in the safe realm of regular Archie, but there are stakes. And part of it, too, is with any kind of fanciful narrative, even comedic, as long as the characters are reacting to their world in a serious way, you will infer that this means something to them. Like, if Mother Striga showed up and was all oogity-boogity scary and Sabrina's like, oh, you're not going to take that seriously. You're just going to roll with and go, okay, it's whatever villain du jour. But if Sabrina is like frozen in place, if she is terrified of this thing, if she is immediately coming up with the contingencies, what do we do? How do we handle this? Even if it is silly or Archie, the characters make it feel like it's real. So you accept, okay, for them, this is real.
We got a comment here from the chat I wanted to bring up. This is from Stray Bullet. Says, this is from my son, Brooklyn, who wanted to be in the chat. Mother Striga looks so creepy.
So we didn't have anything set in stone when we were starting out. And Steve Butler, who I grew up loving his stuff back in the Sonic days when he was working on that, man has a gigantic portfolio. Can do just about anything. Sweetest guy in the world, too. And it's like, I was thinking something kind of like out of The Grudge, out of The Ring, something lank hair, something that is part of the shadows. You don't really want to look too close because you don't want to see it defined. And he is a big fan of the old Madhouse comics and the old Addams Family-esque goofy horror type of amalgamation comics from back in the day. I said, what if we pushed it more kind of Egyptian mummy type thing? B-movie, super scary. And it's like, if we can find a middle ground on that, that sounds like a good idea. And it's Steve Butler. Of course he's going to make it work. And there you go. You see it yourself.
Yeah, it's got a cool Mumra vibe to it.
Yeah.
Just had to sneak it in. What is it about the Archie universe on either side, the sort of harder horror or what this book is, that really leans into this horror? Like, why? Because we all agree that it works, but can you put your finger on what it is?
I think because Archie is, as a property, as a character, as a world, is so generally accessible. Because he can do slice of life, funny stuff, or he can be a time traveler. Yeah. You know, sure, Jughead eats all the burgers. He's also part of the time police, and nobody bats an eye because it's Archie. It just does that.
So you're saying Archie can sort of take on anything, and that makes sense, but it feels like the horror side of it is just popping so hard right now. And well, it feels like that has more.
Part of it is horror is taking what is normal and accessible and comfortable and putting it on its head. You know, leaving your comfort zone is horrifying. So when Archie is the quintessential baseline, all American, smell the apple pie from across the room type of scenario, when anything gets out of that comfort zone, it is immediately engaging and it inherently becomes horrifying. And I'm trying to pretty it up. I don't know. It works, man.
That's the right answer.
Yeah, it works. I don't. What can I tell you?
Well, let's turn to something else that you do real quick. Sonic is a title that you also write. Like we mentioned earlier, you were on Sonic when it was at Archie. You stayed on Sonic when it moved over to IDW, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Stayed is a strong word. Okay. I was lucky enough to get picked up again.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a little more accurate. There were a few months there. It's like, well, I had a good long run. We don't know if anything's going to happen. So working when they reached out, like, yes, please. I would like to continue my career. And I had a solid 2.5-3 years on that. Evan Stanley is lead on that now, but I'm still contributing to usually the classic era specials and miniseries. Occasionally I do an arc here or there, but it's been Evan's show for a bit now.
Well, so having nothing to do with the comic books, the Sonic 3 trailer dropped today. Have you seen it yet? And what's your take on it?
Well, I work with Sega on other projects, so a lot of stuff that was dropped in the trailer was like, oh yeah, I knew that was coming. It's like, oh, they didn't mention the... maybe I shouldn't mention that right now. You'll see. That'll be fun. You'll enjoy it.
Cool. All right. Wow. Fair enough. I wasn't looking for anything bad. I loved it. I thought it was super fun. So I am excited.
Folks have been anticipating this trailer for a while now. So I hope they're satiated and, you know, enjoy it when the actual full film comes out.
Well, so if you're working on the classic stuff, maybe this isn't as applicable to you anymore, but we know very well when like a Marvel movie or a TV show or a DC movie or a TV show comes out, they don't necessarily push entirely in that direction. You're not going to see Chris Evans show up in a Marvel comic book necessarily, but there are things that are going to like parallel a little bit. Like they're leading into Doctor Doom pretty hard right now over in Marvel. Does the same thing happen in the Sonic comics world? Is there any idea of like swerving there a little bit, or is it very much its own train running?
Not terribly so. There's the occasional tie-in book. There was a tie-in comic for the second movie, which told some in-between stories between the first and second film. There was a tie-in book for Team Sonic Racing when that came out a few years ago. The fact that it's been a few years ago is kind of terrifying. But in general, we haven't done that as much with IDW as opposed to what we did back in the Archie days. Part of it too is the relationship is different. The Archie Sonic series was very much a product of its time when there was a division between the Eastern and Western marketing divisions, the visions of how they were going to present this property before globalization was really an idea for IPs. And it was that influenced the whole crazy roller coaster ride that is that title. IDW Sonic is part of the brand. Its classic stories are part of the classic era brand for Sonic. The modern day stories are part of the modern brand as well. And we don't have any titles that are in the movie universe, but it is its own thing in and of itself. So there's less incentive to push the newest property because we are part of the ongoing presentation. Nice. There's no break. It's like you read your IDW Sonic until the next game or animation comes out, and that sets the stage for where the comic can go from there, and it's just a perpetual motion machine.
Something I wanted to kind of go back to a little bit is you get an email that's like, hey, we have this big event going. What do you got? How do you, as a writer, tackle that? Do you kind of go to your, you know, like Sabrina and Archie stuff and kind of look at pitches you have previously done? Do you kind of just think about it and start brainstorming? Like, how does your process work? Like, how do you, if you don't mind, give us a little peek behind the curtain? Well,
something like the Mother Striga storyline. It was, you know, it had very specific asks. It needs to be this long per segment. It needs to be this many segments. It needs to be in these specials with these themes. So that kind of defines who the characters are, what the setting will be. And with that criteria in mind, it becomes something like coloring inside the lines.
Okay.
It's like, okay, I need to hit these bullet points, but that's not terribly engaging when you, you know, put it together like that. That sounds like you're doing a grocery list. So from there, I take it, okay, to hit these points, what kind of story would I like to tell? What would I be entertained by? And law of averages, somebody else will have to be entertained by it as well. And thus far, that seems to be a decent number of people. So I ain't going to question. I'm just going to work with what I know.
Nice.
And it's, you know, go from there. It's like, okay, if we have to have Sabrina in a Halloween story, but we're establishing Mother Striga, what do we do? What are settings we can go to that help underline that Halloween-y feel? What are the characters that would be engaged with this story? How many plot beats can we fit in? Can Steven fit all this on a page? Yes, he can. And then send it off to the editor and hope he likes it, because I already thought this through, Mike. Don't edit it. Don't tell me to change anything.
So, but between Sabrina and Sonic, it feels like you are in sort of in the lines a bit. Do you feel like you want to bust out? Do you need to do a full rev up Sonic style, do the loop to loop and break out of the confines?
Oh, sure. I have been extremely fortunate to be a freelancer my entire career. I've worked on a number of properties, and I relish the opportunity to play with so many toys in other people's toy boxes. But it's always within the constraints of some editor, some licensor, some marketing agreement. There's always parameters to work within. And sometimes that can be challenging, let us say. So I do have my own stuff up and running right now. I've got a couple issues of a comedy adventure series called The Nine Lives of Claus McGee. There's a science fantasy epic that I'm working on called Drogoon. We're hoping to get that book together by the end of the year. And, you know, there's an ash can of 700 different ideas that I'd get off the ground if I win the lotto tomorrow. But there's always that desire to do something my way without any restraint. But there's also no one to say no. There's no one to overlook and say, maybe rein this in. You don't have the budget for that. Are you sure this is the best long-term direction? So there's pros and cons to both things.
We got a question here, which I don't know is your department, but I'll bring it up anyway, just in case you have any insight. Leah Love says, with Archie Horror leading, are there any plans to bring back Jughead, The Hunger, and Vampironica titles and the combined title, I've Got Ideas?
Not my department, so I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, in case you're running out of ideas, Leah Love's got some, so, you know, just so you know.
Free ideas.
Yeah.
They're free.
Yeah. I don't know if they're free, Alex.
Yeah, actually, I don't want to promise.
Never let your ideas go for free.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Leo, next time we have Jamie Rotante on the show, we will definitely ask her. That for sure is her department. Ian, you've already plugged a lot of stuff, but before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to plug? Anything else people should check out?
Oh, I'm sure there is, but with so many irons in the fire, I never can keep track of what's been announced, what's going to be announced, what hasn't been announced, what I shouldn't talk about yet, what's in pre-production, what's in post-production, blah, 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 blah. So head over to my website, bumbleking.com. That's Bumble like the bee, King like the reigning monarch. That has my portfolio, that has my news, that has my social media. That's where I put the news when I know that I can say the news, and it's all chronicled there, and I will go back and reference it myself going, did I say that? Is this how it gets? Ah, right, I did. That's cool. Awesome.
Well, awesome. Nice. Definitely check that out. Ian, congrats on everything.
Yeah, thank man. Can't wait to read it.
Thank you very much. Hope you enjoy.
All right.
Yeah. Hail to the Bubble King.
All right. There we go. Ian Flynn, once again, you can check out the first part of the Mother Striga story coming out September 4th from Archie Comics. And check out the ongoing Sonic title from IDW as well.
Yeah, he does great work.
We've got another guest for you, though.
Exit, which was nice.
What?
The kingly exit he gave us was real nice. That was quite
a little. You got it.
How do you do that with your hand?
You did a little. You know what I mean?
My hand doesn't do it. I don't know what's
going
on. You're
not royal enough, I guess.
I guess not. I can't roll it. You can't do it.
That's the test. That's how
some
they make
people
you a
can't
prince,
roll
Alex.
Their R's.
No, you're no prince.
That's what they did in King Ralph, right? to prove that he could be.
That's how they knew. Wow. I like that's your reference for the royal family.
Sick.
The King
Ref, dude.
That's what the crown was about, I believe.
Oh my god.
Yes.
Dude.
It's building up happening? To the last episode. He's
Alex,
like,
were you gonna say something about our other guest that was coming up?
I don't think so. The rest of the show is about King Ralph. All right, our next guest is the creator of Kids and Monsters, which is coming out October 30th, I believe, from Massive. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Lawson.
Hey,
Adam,
hey,
welcome.
Good to see you. It is good to be back here. You know, I feel like I've been on here a couple of times with you guys talking about different indie books, and it's awesome. I think last time, did we talk Wesley Snipes and my book, The Exile? Uh-huh. I think,
Yeah.
So you guys have been like a part, a staple of my journey in comics. So hats off to you. And
we keep, like all staples, we keep the comic book industry together.
I mean, Justin, without you, it would be lost. You know what I mean? It would be completely lost. Yeah. Thank you for that.
And now you're here to talk about how you've been locked in one of those glass Magneto prisons, right? I believe.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? I felt like I wanted to write a story about that, but to really get into it, I had to lock myself in.
Sure. Smart.
After 30 days, you know, of being in a bucket inside this case, I would be ready.
Yes.
No.
No. We're actually talking about, of course, is Kids and Monsters. Like I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but October 30th from Massive, right?
Yeah. So what's happened is Michael and I don't know if you know Michael Calero. He's the CEO there and the publisher there. And he and I have been at, you know, been good pals this whole ride. And so we've got some other things cooked up that may push a little bit. So don't get too carried away. We got some things we're going to cook up to add on top of it to make it even a more exciting relaunch. So it may push down the line. But that doesn't mean don't be ready for
positive
it. Don't
push.
Be excited about it. But as you know, as we do in this publishing business, you get ideas. And then anyways, things expand. So yeah, so Kids and Monsters is coming out. I don't know if you saw that rad Jake Smith cover. You know, like with Massive, they do a really great job of delivering a whole slew of incredible covers. Which, and it's fun because sometimes I don't even know. There it is. You love that.
So cool.
You know, because I've been with the story for years, and Maxi Dallow is my artist, and he has kind of this James Heron-esque type style of art. And but then when you see an artist like this come together, who I love, Jake Smith, followed his work for years, and he says, and he reads your book and then says, here's my take. It kind of blows you away, right? Because you're like, wait, that's better than me. That was smarter than what I thought of. You know, how come I didn't think of that? And it's kind of a humbling reminder that how sort of genius artists really are. And, you know, so it makes this industry so fun is to see what they do with it. Yeah. So Kids and Monsters, so Massive is this with my second book there. From after the Exiled, you know, kind of an unusual follow-up. That was like a dark and sort of R-rated hitting journey I took with Wesley. And no, he didn't tell me about the Deadpool thing in advance. I hadn't saw it and went, Wes, WTF. He's like, sorry.
There goes my first eight questions.
Yeah, exactly. It was funny because Wes was like, I was like, Wes, how did this happen? Because we were at Comic-Con when it released, right? And I was at the booth and he was on stage and I was like, Wes, what happened? He says, I didn't even tell my kids. You know, you know, so I was like, because he was so afraid it would like get spoiled and ruin his mojo, you know?
Motherfuckers are trying to ice skate uphill, and it sounds like that's what he was doing with holding up.
It exactly was. I know, because I said, Wes, I said, you know what happened here with the blade thing? He says, well, Ryan called, and you know, he said that, you know, they didn't know, weren't so sure about me coming back for Blade or whatever, but then Ryan just said, oh, no, this is how this is going to go. And then that's how it went.
Nice.
And so it kind of was that little inside scoop that I got the feeling that Ryan Reynolds is kind of, he's running a show there, and it's like you can get on it or you can just get out of the way.
Well, it also sounds like it's like, hey, let's call Wesley real quick. He can make it? Great. He's in the movie. Okay, he's done. He's wrapped. Send him on his way. So let's get loose.
That's exactly right. You know, and they did Blade 3 together. So obviously Ryan has a special love of that. And obviously Wes and Ryan are pals. And so there was, you know, sort of fortuitous that they would obviously come back together in such a way. You know, and I think that throughout the last couple of years working with Wes, you know, that, you know, obviously he has special feelings about Blade. And maybe some unspecial feelings about other people who could potentially play Blade. I won't name any names.
Yeah. You really left a mystery on the table, Adam.
So I think this was his great, you know, vindication, you know, there can be only one blade. That's that wasn't a coincidence. That was the line.
No, it was.
Let's just not to. I apologize for getting this back on track, but just to talk about kids and monsters. No, this is great. I love hearing all of this. So, Kids and Monsters. I think we know what the pitch is from the title, but for anybody who isn't familiar with it, it's been around for a while. You did it as a Kickstarter a couple of years back, right?
That's right. I did it as a Kickstarter and on Indiegogo, kind of both platforms, and. The idea of the story is it's about these kids who find monsters in their backpacks and they get pulled into this supernatural war that reflects their crumbling home life, right? And I think that, you know, as a child, I think maybe the most frightening thing that could be is that your parents were to be on the verge of divorce or to get a divorce, right? That I think this idea that this, and I think, you know, the idea that the one stable thing you sort of know could break. And what would that mean for you? And I think that maybe every child in America, if they aren't a child of it, certainly has a friend or a cousin or someone close to them, a part of it.
Yeah.
And that fear of being on that precipice. And that, I think that's where our story is set, is where their parents are on the verge of what could be the end. And as a result, that echoes into these kids' life and their world starts to split. These cracks open in the world and they suck up all their childhood memories, their childhood fort, their childhood candy shop, or sort of their innocence is being sucked up in this. And that leads down into this world within. And in the fiction of this, there are two worlds. There's the world that we know, and then there's this world inside of it. And they live in tandem together. And there's these seven rings that hold it together. And there's these red beasts that are trying to break these rings to split the two worlds apart so that everyone might be miserable like them, right? And so these have been entrusted with protecting these rings, and they're kind of like genies and lamps, except they're monsters living in backpacks, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if you can imagine inside the monster's world, inside that backpack is their whole little keep, but for the kids it's just on their back, and they can only sort of see the backpacks, you know, in this realm that are meant for them, the monster that was meant for them, that's sort of reflective of who they are, maybe their struggles and their strengths, and they kind of become both a partner and a mentor as they're taking this journey. And there's two kids, Gatsby and Mallory. They are the brother and sister. And then it's Mallory's boyfriend, Jin Su, that joins along the ride, right? So it's this trifecta of kids, and they're skateboarders and comic book readers, and they're angry and confused about what could be happening in their world. And they get sucked into this big war, of course, being led up by their math teacher, because it's also a very frightening thing. For
math is scary, math. Dude. Yeah. Yeah. That's why we're talking.
I never use it. Never.
You never use it. It's a simple thing.
I just did a bunch of tangents and cosines earlier today.
You're feeling it.
Oh, now I'm evil just because I'm doing math.
This is a plus sign. I'm doing a plus sign.
Oh, yeah, that's our
plus
sign.
And a minus sign. Yeah.
My math.
That's sort of the pitch, as you say, Alex, for what the story is.
Yeah. What I love about just what we saw of it is it has such a great like 80s movie logic to it of like taking the emotionality and making like just a big choice about what it is. And it, because like you're saying, it feels like when you're a kid, your emotions are huge. And to have that be presented in the physical world, it reminded me of movies like Little Monsters, I want to say.
Little Monsters, Fred Savage. Come on,
Fred Savage. He turns into a monster. Like there's all that sort of like what you're becoming when you make choices. Were you drawing from that sort of tone or that type of storytelling style?
Or did you actually have a monster that lived in your backpack?
Mm. Well, you know, it's funny because the story started to get conceived. I had this idea and I sort of played the storytelling game with my nieces and nephews at the time. And it grew into what this story is and this specific characters and the monsters. But that's exactly right. Because I think that there is something fun about how do you have this feeling, but then you portray it in these big physical, fantastical ways, right? That, I agree with you, that is reminiscent of the 80s storytelling, right? Where it's like this, you know, the never ending story being sort of a key one for me, right? Where it's like,
come on.
With Falcor and, you know, traveling inside of this book to this world that's really a reflection of his loss of his mother, right? It played out in a fantasy opera, if you will. And so I think that that's really at the core of what this is too. And definitely those, informed my own childhood and informed my own storytelling, because I think I enjoy that very much.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Now, since you did have it on BackerKit, Indiegogo, and Kickstarter, and now years later, you're bringing it through with Massive, what changed in the project at all? Or did nothing change, and this is just another printing of it?
No, so Alex, quite a bit changed. So I added 22 pages to this story arc. So it started, it was 72 pages. It was like an oversized hardcover, and it was always meant to be chapter one and then a series of chapters after that. But I added 22 pages to this. You know, I think, you know, when you're raising money on a crowdfunder, you kind of maybe run out a little dough, and so you're trying to figure out how to fit the story in maybe a few less pages, you know, as you do. And I'm always grateful for those people who backed you and support you at that time. It's very cool. I think this was the embellishing, and so it's the same like A to B in regards to the story, but as far as like the emotional journey and the scenes, it expands that out quite a bit. So even if you've read it, this is a new ride. For sure. Cool. With that much content. And then this, you know, it's a 4-issue arc for this first chapter, that is, you know, reflective of what was done in the crowdfunder. And so I think that's even if you've done that, or you're somebody that says, hey, it's already been exposed to the market, there's actually a large portion of this that hasn't, and that's going to be cool.
Yeah. We got a comment here on YouTube. This is from Straight Bullet again, also from Brooklyn. Kids and monsters look so scary because kids with monsters is scary. Brooklyn is a child, by the way. I just want to clarify that. Do you agree with the statement or disagree?
Yeah.
Adam.
Are you trying to pick a fight with Brooklyn right now, or how are you
going to? Yeah, also, but kids and monsters look so scary because kids with monsters is scary, and it is true. I think there, you know, this story is sort of a fun and adventurous with some certainly frightening moments, right? I think, like, as you know, Ian was even talking about before, like at a different time, you know, in the 80s, you'd have kind of some frightening stuff in younger kids.
Yeah.
Stories.
Oh, yeah.
There were boobs in PG movies, Adam.
I know, did Alex, what happened to us?
It was a different
Alex,
time.
You bring that up on almost every show we do. I don't know what you're doing.
Every interview, if I can. Every interview.
Definitely those boobs in PG films impacted you. It's been with you.
Yeah, when I'm elected president, we will bring back boobs in PG films.
What is happening
could somebody get this man on the ballot? Get this man on the ballot.
Thank you.
Single issue campaign.
But actually, I mean, just to pivot off this into an actual question, what age range would you say this is for, Adam?
Well, I think that this is, I don't know if you're reading Wes Craig's Kaya.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love that. I love Wes. I think he's a great creator. I think it has a lot of that elements to it, where it is an all-ages story because there isn't necessarily language, nudity, gore, those things that would be tough for maybe a, you know, 10-year-old or 5-year-old or something. But it's thematically quite deep. And so I think it can be enjoyed by adults all the way down to kids. So it's kind of a four-quadrant story. But the characters in the story are kind of between the ages of 13 and 15.
Okay.
Cool.
Awesome. Well,
that's what I'm saying is everyone should read this.
Yeah, right.
There it is.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
There we go. Before we let you go though, obviously this is coming up. You already mentioned a couple of other things that you're working on, but anything else you want to plug? Anything else people should be looking out for?
You know, I did a horror series book called The Kill Journal, which we even talked about on this show. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing a little crossover with another indie creator. It launches this Friday. It's called Psycho Slumber. It's a little slasher story, 60-page one-shot. Juan Gedeon, who did Jurassic League for DC.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Love that.
Great guy. Did an amazing job on it. That'll be on Indiegogo and Kickstarter as well, too, coming up starting this Friday. So that's a fun thing to plug. And there could be more in the world of The Exiled, but I can't reveal it here, but I'm revealing it here.
That's what you call a light reveal. That's like just
soft
a very
reveal.
Yeah.
Soft.
Are we going to have Ryan Reynolds come into that as like payback?
Could be. I can either confirm or deny.
There you go.
That's the right answer right there.
Adam, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. Love you guys. Love the chat.
Always great to catch you.
Always a pleasure. Here's hoping a guard comes in with like a little bit of metal in his blood so you can get out of that place, but we'll see what happens.
That's the trick.
Yeah, good luck.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, guys.
Later.
All right. The book is called Kids and Monsters is from Massive. It's coming out probably October 30th, but you can check it out on their site. And yeah. I believe there's pre-order. I don't want to promise that, but at least there's information there that you can check out.
Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And there we go. That is it for that. And now it's time for our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience question. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments. You can leave them on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Maybe Instagram. I'll keep an eye on that. We'll see what happens. But why don't we talk about what we're drinking? Tonight is Stray's Old Fashioned Night. That is what Stray Bullet has called for. You are drinking one, Justin?
Daddy made it. Daddy likes it.
Excellent. I skirted an Old Fashioned. I made... it's a rye, Punta Mez, and maraschino. Does that count?
What? No, that's not even close, really.
Are you drinking a Shirley Temple?
Yeah, I'm drinking a Shirley
Temple. I'll give you a Manhattan. That's close.
It's close to a Manhattan. It's very good, I'll tell you what.
It looks good. I love your our glasses are cousins, if nothing else. So shouts to that. And true. Pete is drinking out of the regular, the classic till. Glass.
I drink out of the trough, when possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Pete's been promising for a number of weeks that he's ready to move off of Landshark. But
hey, man, I got two more beers left before, I finish that 30
shotgun
pack.
Shotgun him, man. Shotgun him.
Yeah, let's do it tonight.
Let's get through this, buddy. Here we go. Schoikler says, what are some of your favorite comics based on video games other than Sonic?
Oh, other than Sonic.
Took all of our answers.
Streets of Rage. No, that's not a comic. Let's see. NHL.
Pete work through all of the video games he's played since 1986.
Battletoads.
And see where we land.
Wait, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Scott, that was I played that.
I believe they were based on a video game.
Yeah, I think so. Favorite comics based on video games.
There were some Arkham Asylum comics, weren't there, Alex?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're an Arkham guy.
I don't know that I read them though.
I feel like we did cover them.
We probably read one or two and probably like, I don't know what's going on here, but
I remember a very lanky Joker. Lanky. Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is a lanky Joker. It's definitely, it's Mark Hamill's Joker.
Yeah.
So.
But lankier.
Lankier. You know? Yeah, maybe he is lankier.
Master Blaster comic, was that one?
Mega Man.
You're digging. You're only going into the past. Mm-hmm. You're digging even deeper.
Mega Man was fun.
Wasn't what was the Injustice or wasn't there?
Oh yeah, the Injustice comics were actually pretty good, right?
And they've been pretty well incorporated into the DC universe mm-hmm. in different ways. So I think that's definitely the one that has had the most
good call
mainstream effect.
Yeah. This is from Kyle Jones. If you guys were given the lead in the Spider office, what creative team would you hire for ASM and how would you try to reinvigorate the book? Mm. I mean, I'd re-up Zeb Wells and make it all Paul all the time.
Hey, man, Zeb Wells is not only a great writer, but a great guy. So watch your mouth, man.
I hope we get some more Paul action. It's Paul time.
God, what? No. Die, Paul. Die.
No, Wreck Ralph.
Wreck, whatever that was.
Wreck It Ralph?
No, what are you saying?
Wreck Rap.
Wreck Rap. Thank
you. Oh,
thank
okay. You. I thought Justin you were saying that Wreck It Ralph should write Spider Man, and I honestly couldn't agree more. Get Vanellope Van Schweetz on art.
Wow.
Wow.
What is happening? So let's talk actual creative team.
Sure.
To hit on some Spider Man.
This is a bad idea, but it's my first idea. Ooh. Jonathan Hickman has been doing such an interesting job.
First idea, worst idea.
It would be interesting to have him after that's done, after the 2 years of Ultimates, move on to Amazing Spider-Man proper and see what he does with that.
Wow. That's interesting. I wonder what I feel like so much of the Hickman run is reinterpreting. I'd be curious how he would then turn it back to.
Oh, he'd ruin it. Just he'd interpret ruin it. We would hate it. Yeah. Everybody would hate it more than whatever is going on right now.
I have a controversial answer. I have a strange answer. I think so much of
the Hamburglar.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. I don't know how you knew that. That
bring
guy.
Bring back the Grimace Shake.
I don't know why you're both. Are you guys both just fast foodies right now? In a weird hungry. Way. I feel like so much of the Spider-Man universe lately has been pulling in not just like in like the Batman books. It's like the Bat family. There's like, you know, eight characters you're pulling. The Spider family is so huge lately. You need someone who can handle and balance all those characters. Bill Willingham from Fables. Bring him in. Have him tell an uber story that is epic and mythological in its foundation.
If you want somebody who can handle a lot of spiders, I would say John Goodman's character.
Why are you going twice?
Phobia. I'm just saying jokes. Calm
He's
down
trying to get back to King Ralph. He's trying to get it back.
I'm working my way back there.
All right. First, this is what I would do. We do a peach momoko cleanser. Okay. We have peach momoko. Do a couple issues.
Cleanser.
Just focus on the art a little bit, less on the story. Just give us a palate cleanser, right? Mm-hmm. Then we bring in Daniel Warren Johnson to bring the heart. Okay.
And that's a good call, actually. Yeah. That's a good.
So
call.
That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. He would definitely kill Aunt May or something like that.
Hey, how dare you? You don't know that.
That sounds like a Spider-Punk story. I feel like we need a DWJ Spider-Punk story.
Oh, yeah. That would be very cool. Yeah. I think I've given several real answers to that. Nelson Kelso says, have you guys watched or are watching any of the newer animated series out? For example, Tales of the TMT, Cape Crusader, and Kite Man. Thoughts?
Yes. And yes.
There's three.
So, and no, Pete's saying he's seen them, but he has thoughts, but he won't say them.
Yeah.
I think we're living in a proliferation, I wouldn't call it a renaissance, but I would call it like it's everyone's pushing their chips in animation. But we're getting a little bit mixed results, I think, with these shows. Specifically, Cape Crusader has been increasingly disappointing. Is that a fair assessment?
Ooh. Well, I'd tell you, we've been waiting for Justin to finish watching Cape Crusader so we can really get into it in the weaker and the geeker. But I just wanted to give a shout out to Nelson Kelso and just be like, hey, man, it's great to hear from you. I hope you're enjoying those series. But I got to check out Tales.
Are you running for office?
Yes, I am.
This is a bureaucratic answer.
Well, you know, he's an old-time fan, so I just want to give him a little love. I want to check out Tales of TMNT. Disappointed by the Cape Crusader. Kite Man is great, but it's a little bit of a letdown just because the Harley Quinn series was just so phenomenal and doing a lot of different really cool stuff, where Kite Man is just kind of a little bit more focused. And
I guess you hate Matt Oberg specifically.
Come on. Moberg is an old school friend of the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of right there with Pete. I haven't seen Tales of the TMNT. I thought Cape Crusader was a little disappointing, and Kite Man is a little disappointing as well. I enjoyed parts of both of them. They're good episodes of Cape Crusader, and Kite Man's still fun. I'm having a nice time watching it. But
we're just a little middling, and that's fine. That's the era we're in.
Michael T says, you guys have been doing this for quite a while now. What keeps you going? If I can,
Michael T is like, you guys should probably quit soon, right?
If
like,
I can answer for all three of us, I think the answer is spite. It's spite, right?
Exactly. It's it's a very long game of chicken. None of us will balk.
Nobody's going to balk first.
I mean, I got to say Stray Bullets Cocktails is a good, that's like Cars Need Gas, and that's my fuel.
I just do the show so I can still be friends with Stray Bullies, basically.
Oh, that's
did you mean to say Justin and Alex, Pete? Because let me say this earnestly and from the heart, I love doing this show. I will do this show for the rest of my life because it's fun and it is like downtime. It is like, you know, why is Pete laughing so hard?
Because you said I'm going to do this for the rest of your life, and I was like, man, the only way the show ends if Justin, you know, quietly bows out, but if he's saying he's going for the rest of his life, I'm going to have to get like a wheelchair up here. To
you think I'm going to quietly bow out?
To answer it also seriously, Michael T, we have fun doing the show. It's fun to talk about comic books. I enjoy hearing Justin and Pete's opinions on stuff. I love interacting with you guys and hearing from you all online or in person when we're able to do that. It's great. It's a nice, like Justin was saying, it's a nice respite in the middle of the week. So
I mean, we're reading the comics. It's nice to have an outlet to talk about them. And it is a real passion for all three of us, comic books and comedy. So it's a nice kind of blend for us. We found a nice little niche corner of the internet where we can exist. So it's pretty cool.
Just if we didn't have this show, people would be walking up to strangers in the grocery store and screaming his Punisher opinions at them. So really just protecting the old ladies of Pennsylvania from
This is an audience question from Brooklyn, who is just learning to read. Is Alex's last name Zombie? Why does his mom and dad name him Zombie? That's a great question, Brooklyn. My last name is not Zombie. It's actually Zalbin. That's what the Z stands for.
It's pronounced Zombie, though.
It's pronounced Zombie. And I am dead and I love brains.
Try not to make fun of Brooklyn for learning to read, Alex, if you could.
I'm not.
All right, great.
Well, we also shouldn't lie to him, but.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fair.
But Alex.
No, it's Zalbin. Here, I'll give you a fun fact about my name, Brooklyn. So, Zalbin is a made up name. And what I mean by that is my family.
Are you even real?
I'm one of the main characters in If, the hit movie.
Oh, sick, dude.
You lost me at Hit Movie. Choice.
Yeah, I'm the banana with legs. Anyway, when my family came over on the boat, my family emigrated from Poland and Russia. I think this is the Poland side of the family. The name of the family was Zabrowski. And they came over, and this happened to a lot of families, but they came over and they're like, hey, what's your name? We got to write it down. And they said Zabrowski. And they're like, great, Zalbin. Somehow they got that out of that. So literally anybody who is named Zalbin is related to me because it was made up entirely off of that one person who said Zabrowski when they came over. So
now, are you related to Henry Zabrowski?
Nope, it's spelled differently. It's Zabrowski. He's Zebrowski with an I at the end, and I was a Y. But maybe?
And Alex, the ship you were on was the SS Cypher, or was it the SS Revelation?
Oh, come on, man. Come on. It was the Revelation. Stanley says, what do you think is the future of movie theaters? Should they only be there for big movies, or do small films have a place? I think they absolutely have a place, and I think, in fact, once theaters start to realize they can't keep leading into bigger and bigger 4DX spectacles for everything while they're charging $100 for theaters and they're going to price everything out, they're going to find that there is a middle ground there. I think they're already kind of finding that.
It's crazy. Like movie theaters forever, it was just like people just went there every, it was like where you went on the weekend. And you saw movies. And then something changed in our society, whether it was like TV,
pandemic,
COVID, there's a lot of factors coming into play. And now it's sort of like movie theaters are like, hey, you want to come over to my house and watch this movie? And it's a little bit more of a, I don't know, you know, it's not the standard party. So I think there has to be enough movies, which I think is broad, not narrow. I think the narrowing of the industry is what is causing the problems. It's the broadness is what helps get people back out to theaters.
But it's also theaters, and they've always been this way, but the things that are working at movie theaters are communal experiences. Like horror movies, doing great, because people like to sit in a crowd and scream with other people in a crowd. They enjoy that. Superhero movies, still doing great, because people like to cheer and yell and have that communal experience of watching a big action movie or a superhero movie or whatever. It is the stuff in the middle that's suffering a little bit, but I really do think when we have seen, when there's something that an audience responds to and it's actually given a chance to stay in a movie theater, it works. Like, it works long term. If it's something that's a mid-budget rom-com that they're like, great news, it's going to be out for 1 week before it heads to Max, everybody's like, eh, whatever, I'll just wait for Max. But if they throw it in theaters and really let it get legs for a couple of months, it actually does build, because this has always traditionally happened. Adults don't really go to see adult movies on opening weekends. They get to see it whenever they want to see it.
Adult movies?
Adult movies. You know what I mean.
I do. And I would also say, given that TV is a little bit down, and I think it will be for the next like pretty long while, I think we might see a little bit more of a rebound of people leaving their homes to get their stories at the movie theater.
I hope they bring back like the 99-cent like rerun movies where they just kind of bring back some classics on like a Friday night and then kind of like show some cool stuff and brings a little bit more community aspect to it.
I was so bummed because the theater near me had matinee prices. They would do like 10, 11 a.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. And I went to see Trap for $7. And I was like, this is great. This is perfect. I'm in here with a couple of old ladies on a Saturday morning watching Trap, having the best time. Then I was like, maybe I'll do this from now on. Saturday or Sunday, I'll go to see it. After that weekend, never again. They stopped having the matinees. And I think my suspicion.
You broke it.
Yeah. They were like, that guy, he took advantage of the system somehow. We're shutting this down. No more.
Yeah. There you go. They were like, this guy and his three old lady friends have to pay full price. They've been fucking us for too long.
Yes. So Schreuchler is now apparently on multiple platforms. He's now
I love Schreuchler on Twitch.
Yeah, Schreuchler on Twitch. He's also playing Destiny 3. Did I say that right? If you hosted your own convention, what would you do to make it stand out?
Amazing food. I would have
I'll tell you what.
Sick food trucks.
Make fun of that. That is a good idea. They do that kind of at New York Comic Con. They have the whole food truck area, and it's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, but good idea.
I mean, I think if there's a way to combine Artist Alley and panels, that's the thing to unlock. Like if you can make an Artist Alley where they are, creators are like just talking, they're doing commissions live, stuff like that. I think that's where you can really get, because that combines the two sides of every convention. Mm.
I hear what you're saying. Can I throw some questions your way about that? So I think the two. So would this be at their tables or would it be like a stage in Artist Alley?
I think you bring. Yeah, I think you have to take, because I do think you want to preserve a table because that's where a lot of creators make their money.
Yeah.
But sort of bring the Artist Alley energy to a more stage, a larger panel situation.
OK. All right. I hear what you're saying. Leah Love says, what independent comic run completed or ongoing current or vintage needs more audience love?
Ooh, wow.
That's indie run completed or ongoing.
Concrete. Or
vintage. I mean, that's a great answer. Classic answer.
Lock and Key. Well, I got a TV show made, so maybe not, but.
Oh, gosh.
Murder Falcon. I'm just saying my highlights here.
You sure are.
Yeah.
I mean, we love Ice Cream Man. I feel like that just keeps trucking along and doesn't get as much love as it should. But that's great. And what else?
That is really good. We talked recently. We have an interview coming out with the creator of The Silver Coin.
Good call.
Is a great comic if you like some truly horrifying horror that you can check out, anthology style.
Also, Shiga, bookkeeper, or no, book hunter, that's what it is, was also a really fantastic.
You truly are hitting your highs. Pete looking around frantically at his collection.
I'm looking at my shelves. Yes, I am.
Yeah, mine are too far away, so I can't actually check them. But
getting some highlights.
Frigiga Rosa says, since current comics and movies are good again, should we get a new Alien versus Predator?
Always.
A new movie? Is the question for a new Alien versus Predator?
I think probably a new movie. I started watching Alien versus Predator last night. That movie is dumb.
It's so funny you say that, Alex. Dude. I watched Aliens last night. And that movie's fucking great.
It's great. Oh, it's good. We'll talk about this later.
Finish watching it, and then maybe come back and let us know what you think.
Alien versus Predator or Aliens?
Yeah. Alien versus Predator.
Because it's great?
Yeah, I thought I had a great ending.
Oh, no. It's super fun, but it's very dumb at the same time.
Well, I mean,
if we're talking about comics, I do think Marvel's been doing a great job at really keeping the stories of Aliens versus Alien and Predator separately going. And I'm very excited to check out, is it Aliens versus Avengers?
Yeah.
Whoo, that looks fun.
Yeah, so it does.
I do think they're doing a great job in the comic book form to keep those properties going. I haven't seen Romulus yet. I heard it's like good, but medium in its way it's pushing the franchise forward.
Mm.
So I think those franchises both need a little bit. I think Prey, if you guys watched that movie,
oh, yeah.
excellent, was and was what I think the Aliens franchise should do, is do a little bit of a lo-fi reset and get back to basics.
Well, and I don't know if you read this, but Dan Trachtenberg, who did Prey, just started filming another Predator movie today called Badlands that takes place in the future. It's Dakota Fanning, isn't it? It's one of the Fannings, but... Great.
Nice. Great guess.
Yes. So great. Good stuff. And also from Frederica Rosa, any thoughts on the Acolyte cancellation?
Yeah, it sucks, man.
Well, I mean, we talked a little bit about the merits of the show, and I think that's debatable. What it comes down to isn't even the merits of the show. It's just people didn't watch it. Not enough people watched it. And that, to me, is the crazier, like, fact. Like, people aren't watching these Star Wars shows, even from the jump. The first episode didn't get the high highs that they expect, let alone the end of the series. So why is it? What has changed so much in the Star Wars universe that people aren't even tuning in to a new idea?
Maybe I don't even think it's... too many things coming out, and they're...
Yes.
I love it. I want more.
Yeah, but, okay.
Too much information.
Yeah, beep, boop. Nobody's really watching the Star Wars shows for the most part. Also, nobody's really watching the Marvel shows. Also, nobody's really watching any of the originals at all on Disney Plus. The only thing that they're watching on Disney Plus is like Moana and Elemental and whatever new theatrical movie comes there. On the TV side, the only thing anybody's watching is Bluey, and that's it. And that's also an acquired show. So there is something to be said. Like, I'm not discounting the idea of like what's going on with Star Wars, because clearly there's something is going on with Star Wars. But I think the greater question is what is going on with the original stuff on Disney Plus, because putting original Disney properties on a Disney streaming service that ostensibly people have subscribed to because they're like, I want Disney in my life 24/7. If that's not working, that whole system is broken. That streamer is broken, and they need to figure out why people are subscribing to it. And my suspicion is the back catalogs they can put on stuff for their kids while they go do something else. That's always what it's been, and that's fine. It has a great catalog for that. But I think they maybe need to like not do the originals.
So you're saying they should just start marketing it as, hey, Disney Plus, we'll watch your kids so you don't have to.
Sure.
Yeah, well, but I think there's a telling part in there, Alex, is... The stuff people are watching is good, and it's not... I think the fatal flaw with all of this, it was like, oh, great. We'll give these smaller characters their own stuff and these smaller ideas. When everyone's like, no, I like Star Wars and Marvel because it's all big. Mm-hmm. I don't want small. I want big. And so I think they're not doing what made them popular. They're doing tiny versions, which... on a smaller screen has made everyone disengage.
I don't know how true this is, but there was a report that came out that the Acolyte cost $630,000 per second or something like that.
Wow.
Like these shows are costing hundreds of millions of dollars to make. And that's insane in and of itself.
Well, but I don't mean tiny budgetarily. I mean, from a storytelling perspective, the stories are so far away from the core of the story. Like, they're thinking about this, like, how can we get away from our core story? When really, I think it's like, we need to create a new core story or do stuff that is the core story. And I think Star Wars did bad versions of core story. Okay. They made money on those, but that's not that tarnished, I think, the general story. So I think it's like, let's start a new core story, take some creative risks rather than be like, how can we do something that feels like it touches a little bit of what was cool, but never really gets to anywhere, I think.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. Luckily, Bob Iger listens to this podcast. Kyle Jones says, where'd you guys get your first comic book?
My stocking Christmas Day.
Oh, look at you. Yeah, if I helped my mom with the groceries, I got to pick out a comic on the spinner rack. So that was the first, my first comic. Wegmans spinner rack.
Oh, shouts to Wegmans. And then eventually, the very small gas station in the middle of nowhere upstate New York had a spinner rack. There had a customer base of like 30, and they still had a spinner rack.
I first got mine from my dad. He would go into work in the city and pick up one on the way home. I think it was from Forbidden Planet in the city, but I'm not sure. That was definitely the first comic book shop he took me to. So there you go.
Ooh.
And I will throw this here. Leah Love says, pulls the pin. The Last Jedi was a masterpiece.
Agreed. Oh, Leah Love coming in hot.
Agreed.
Love it.
Hard agree.
Yeah. Probably the best Star Wars movie, frankly. I'll throw that out there.
What?
Yeah.
That's the best of all of them?
Of all of them, bro?
Yeah.
Slow your goddamn roll.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, John Carpenter is the greatest movie ever, too. All right, Alex, we got to watch what you say.
John Carter, not John Carpenter.
Sorry.
Play cool, hot shot.
Yeah, oops.
All right, why don't we move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you have $25, you'd want to go to a comic book shop. All we need is a brave volunteer or first hand up, pick me. I'd love $25, whatever you want to put in there, and we will pick you.
Yeah. Pete, I'm excited to find out who you're paying tribute to and then get angry at that.
Oh, great. Yeah. This is a fun bit.
This is what we talk about now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Me, Michael T.
Michael T. All right, Michael T, you're in.
Woo!
All right, today's
one
trivia.
One of the many Michael T's in the comments tonight.
Yeah, today's trivia is about the amazing comic Wolverine number 145 and a small nod to the legend Shelley Duvall, R.I.P. Olive Oil. All right, here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Okay, Mike T, here we go. This issue has a special mistake variant cover. What is it called? Is it A, the Bone Claw variant? B, anyone else worried about how much she smokes? C, Lisa Burns?
And ever since Shelley Duvall died, you said you swore off all olive oil.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Been using a lot of castor oil, which I think is effective.
Castor oil? Wow.
That is correct, Michael. Wow. Well done, sir. Don't overthink these. Question number two. What color are Wolverine's claws in the second printing variant? Was it A, gold? B, bro is all slouched over. Yo, can C, guy stand even?
Was there a C?
Wait. Yeah, that is C, a guy stand even.
Oh, that's the guy's name.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Probably A. I guess we're done talking.
A is correct. Thank you. All right, here we go. Last one.
What keeps us going? Well, nothing after this show.
Nothing.
Yeah.
One of my favorite anchors worked on this ish. Who was it? Is it A, Dexter Vines? B, look at all this white fur. And what the shit is that? C, Bunny Seaman.
Man, you know, Pete, you dig deep. I appreciate that. A lot of people.
A is
really
correct, Michael. Yes.
Wow, congratulations.
The other Michael T.
Michael T. And then Michael Timmons like, Jesus, guy.
All right. So Michael T, maybe C. Either way, Michael T, you have gotten a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we will get that off to you. Pete, what are you paying tribute to?
Of course, we're talking about the 1980 legend, The Shining.
Are we talking about that?
Yes, we are.
All right. As we all know, new comics are cool and they're coming out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to? Pete.
Oh, man. So many great stuff to talk about and get into with you guys. I'm looking forward to Gotham City Sirens number 4, Zatanna Bring Down the House number 3, The Incredible Hulk Annual, and The Last Mermaid number 6. Right, Justin? Come on.
Great picks.
Yeah, man. You love the mermaids, especially the last ones. I got to give it up. There's a lot of there. I agree. There's a lot of great stuff. I'm looking forward to Amazing Spider-Man number 56. You know, you were lumping on Zeb Wells earlier. But I do think while his run has been a little bit inconsistent, there have been some great highs. Looking forward to another one of those. Got to shout out The Flash number 12. This has been. Simon Spurrier's run on The Flash has been one of the most exciting Flash runs of all time. It's been so good. I can't wait to see how it's not coming to an end, but it feels like it's turning towards something different. So very excited for that. And how can I not shout out something I already mentioned? Aliens versus Avengers. I'm so hype on Aliens right now. I don't know why. Can't wait to read.
I am excited for all of those things. Also, I'll give a shout out to Archie, The Decision number 1 from Archie Comics. That's Tom King and Dan Parent on an Archie comic. So that's pretty wild.
It would be great to have to talk to those guys because this book is going to be something.
Oh, right? I wish. I guess we'll see what happens. Wait a couple of seconds.
Dream rotation.
plan rotation. Berserker, The Lost Book of Bee number 1 is also coming out. That brings together Keanu Reeves, Matt Kent, and Ron Garney once again. The original team. Also, give a shout out to Universal Monsters Frankenstein number 1 from Michael Walsh. You can stay tuned for an in-depth interview with Michael Walsh that's going to be the Comic Book Club feed about this very book tomorrow as a bonus podcast. So all of those things, and for Brooklyn, our most faithful listener, I will give a shout out to Sesame Street number 1 from Oni Press is coming out tomorrow.
We're catering too hard to Brooklyn, I feel like.
You know that's what I mean? Okay. Can't do it enough.
Speak to the fans. Yes. Dark take on Big Bird, right?
this is another Tom King book, and Big Bird just dies over the course of...
Spoilers, bro.
Sorry. No, it's a straightforward Sesame Street book, which sounds very cute. Excited to check that out. All of those are going to be in our Stack podcast that debuts Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Woo-hoo! A couple of people we want to thank Ian Flynn for coming on to talk about all of the stuff with Archie Comics. Also, Adam Lawson for talking about Kids and Monsters. Next week, Tri Vong is going to be here to talk about The Strange Tales of Oscar Zahn. And also, weird coincidence, Tom King and Dan Parent are going to be here.
Wait, am I holding a monkey's paw?
To talk about Archie the Decision. So that should be a lot of fun. Comic Book Club News, our news podcast coming out daily. So check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club. Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your grin.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now. Save big.